Life coaching and discovery. Inspiration with an invitation to learn from a self-discovery guide. Mark is passionate about you making positive changes in your life so that it becomes a vibrant, ongoing journey of growth and discovery. Welcome to the Inspire Possibility Show. Now, here's your host, Mark Susnow.
Hey everybody, welcome. It's Mark Susnow. You're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show. And every week I have somebody on the show who I consider a cutting-edge thought leader, somebody who I feel has something to say, something to offer us, and perhaps give us some new insights in how we see a particular problem, particular issue, particular challenge. And I get many requests for people to be on the show, who usually from publicists, and they have somebody who's written a book or as a speaker. And what I always find a hot topic is relationships. And periodically I have people contact me about being on my show, usually around Valentine's Day. But there are other times of the year. So I got this request to be on the show from a publicist, and her client wrote a book about, he's written a couple of books about relationships, about people. He is he considers himself a relationship guru. He's shifted from somebody who basically was in a relationship that didn't really work out, and he's really become an expert on cheating. And so that's really what he talks about. He talks about mending your relationship after cheating, and I'm sure that many of you have been in that situation where you've been in a relationship and you've cheated or somebody's cheated, and this particular person wrote a book called The Problem Was Me. Then he had a second book, Don't Put Out Your Crap. And I've been waiting for him to arrive to call in, and I think he's here now. Are you here now, Thomas?
Yes, I am.
So welcome, Thomas Gagliano. He's an author, speaker, life coach, and I see our topic's mending your relationship after cheating. And that, it sounds like you're an expert in that topic. Am I correct in that?
Yes, that's what I do. I help couples if they decide to make the decision to go forward in their relationship. I help couples mend that wound in their relationship and get back on track.
Mm-hmm. And did I get it correct? Your problem was the first book was The Problem Was Me?
Yeah, the first book, The Problem Was Me, is about my life story and all the people I've helped do that with. And my new book is Don't Put Your Crap in Your Kid's Diaper. The cleanup course can last a lifetime. And it's really just trying to help parents get on track, because I truly believe everything does begin in the home. Intimacy, everything, bullying, addiction, everything. So that's what I talk about in my second book.
Mm-hmm. And you know what I'm curious about? I mean, I think it's a fascinating subject because it's so prevalent. And
right. What
I'm curious about is I know people are perhaps on this show more interested in the cheating aspect, but do you find that, first of all, let's talk about what you mean by cheating. I think that's a good topic, because I noticed, I did look at the materials that your publicist sent, and I know that you have cheating it doesn't necessarily mean that somebody's actually having a physical relationship. You're talking about there can be an emotional, that can be, if there's an emotional connection with somebody, that can be cheating too. And I read that somewhere.
In my experience, that it's more painful when it's an emotional relationship, because that's really something that you should be giving your partner more than anything, more than even a physical cheating. That's more the body, but I know that I spoke to a lot of my clients, female clients, that pain of that emotional, what they're giving emotionally to someone else that they should be given to their partner is much, much more painful. Now, you know, when we talk about cheating, you make a great point, and one of the points is that, you know, when we cheat, it could be having an affair, but we could also, you know, there are a lot of men out there that are addicted to pornography, and they're cheating by viewing pornography all day long. And you know, again, sexual intimacy to them is something that they control with pornography. They click it when they want to. They get their feel good when they want to. They click it off. And all of these things that they're not giving to their partner, they're giving to pornography, which creates a devastating message to their partner, that their partner isn't, you know, pretty enough, good enough, smart enough, young enough. So there's all aspects of cheating, but basically everything is just taking something away from your partner that your partner should be getting.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you mean about an emotional affair? I mean, what I have a sense of what I. Yeah, I mean, first of all, what if you just have a strong, what is an emotional affair as opposed to, let's say, just having a strong connection with somebody? I mean, you have friends, and you're totally emotionally connected to your friends. Are you saying not to have those kind of friends?
No, I think the difference is the emotional intimacy. Look, having friends is great. But if I'm going to somebody, if I'm in a relationship with a woman and I'm going to another woman with all of my desires, if I'm going to her with all of my inner feelings, my struggles in life, my emotional intimacy, that's something that somebody shouldn't have, my significant other should have. If I'm spending time with that person, that should be spent with my significant other. If I'm, again, telling that person the secrets that my significant other doesn't know, emotional secrets, mm-hmm. feelings, all of those things, mm-hmm. that is an emotional affair, different from a physical affair, which is, you know, somebody you just meet and connect, you get that sexual pleasure from each other or whatever.
Right.
The emotional relationship can be much more devastating, and again, this is what my clients are telling me, that because that's something that's something that should be shared just between the couple. It shouldn't be shared mm-hmm. between the person and someone else. Those are those feelings,
right.
those deep feelings that they have, and it's very different from just having a good friend.
Well, I guess what I'm curious about it is I've said on the before the show started about it's such a common problem, but I want to come back to this. I hear this beeping in the background. Is that on your phone?
Yeah.
Or,
No, I'm sorry.
I just had
my kids go upstairs. I apologize.
Okay. So what I'm curious about, Thomas, is this idea of back to this emotional affair. I mean, where you draw the line in terms of just having somebody that, I mean, quite often you have one partner. It's not as they're not as well versed in being a communicator as the other person. And I know in a lot of situations, there's a general consensus that women are better communicators than men in terms of emotional connection. They're better able to connect better than men. That's a perception, a generalization.
You're making a great
point. And I know that it's not true all the time, and I know a lot of men that I have great connections with. But there is that stereotype that women are better connectors. And so what about them? I mean, I guess what I'm questioning is that statement about an emotional affair, because, I mean, where do you draw the line? I mean, I draw the line in physical intimacy. That's, for me, like the line, because what's wrong with reaching out to somebody and sharing your heart with them and just having a great friend? I mean, there's definitely an emotional bond there, but it doesn't
mean... But
is
you sharing a part of your heart that should be given to your significant other? That's the question here. Is that heart mm-hmm. being given to your significant other? It's not a question that I have a good friend, that I'm sharing what mm-hmm. my wife or husband already knows, and I'm just, like, talking about certain pieces. You know, there are certain things that your husband and wife, that's what intimacy is. It's intimate. And if those are the things that should only be between those two people, when you talk about intimacy, it consists of physical intimacy, emotional intimacy. This is part of the deal. And, you know, there's a lot of men out there. Look, you know, when I was a kid, my dad, if I should cry, God forbid, share a feeling or cry, my dad addressed me as his little girl. So there's a lot of men that have grown up with parents that haven't said to them, hey, kid, how you doing? Tell me how you're feeling. There's a lot of men out there that didn't grow up in a household where they felt comfortable sharing their feelings. They were wimps. They were babies.
Right.
So a lot of the childhood messages growing up has stopped men especially, but women too to some extent, from being comfortable enough to share their feelings. Now, look, if you don't have communication, you don't have anything when it comes to intimacy, emotional intimacy. You need to learn how to communicate. That's what I teach in my groups, learning how to share your feelings, learning how to validate the other person, be empathetic to the other person, put boundaries down when you need to. Nobody should be attacked. You have to learn to put your big boy, big girl shoes on and show up like an emotionally healthy adult. And many of us don't know how to do that. We weren't shown that as children. You know, if we had the version of intimacy as a child, that when conflict erupted in the house, mom or dad shut down, somebody ran away, somebody got angry, we don't have the tools to learn how to do intimacy as an adult. We're going to copy that or do the exact opposite of what we learn as children. So many of us have to really learn, and this is what I teach, how to be intimate, and it begins with communication. You know, it begins with discussing your feelings. It begins with being able to say to your partner, listen, I want to talk to you about this issue, but one of my fears are we're just going to argue, and I don't want to do that. I want to be able to hear your feelings and hear. I want you to hear my feelings. Let's do this thing called intimacy and conversation. Many people don't know how to do that. They'd rather stop, not discuss it. And then if you find somebody else that you're sharing that with, that's the emotional affair I'm talking about. Things that should be discussed within your own relationship that you're taking outside of your relationship.
I guess, again, I come back to this. I guess I'm kind of questioning your definition of cheating, because I have a different definition, because I mean, they're just some people. And the other thing is, you know, it's a bold statement. And what about, let's say, in a relationship, couple's been together a long time, and one person just doesn't want to have sex anymore. What happens then? Somebody just says, I don't feel sexual.
How does it affect the relationship? That has to be asked to both partners. Listen, you know, your spouse does not want to have sex. How do you feel about that? It's discussing it, communicating it. That's the key, again, is to be able to talk to each other, to know how each other feels. Now,
but what if one person says, look, I have a need for this. And the other woman says, well, I'm just, you know, the other partner said, well, I'm just not in that space. They're not having an affair with anybody.
Why?
Because it's just a personal thing for whatever reason.
Well, what is the personal
thing? Nothing to do with the partner.
Well, you need to come to me, and we need to work this out with your partner. Your partner needs to know the whys. Look, all of us in life have a whole bunch of what we want in our relationship. We need to look at what we need to do to get what we want. If I, you know, if all I want is my wife to have sex with me and to do this with me and to that with me, what do I need to do to get the want? What's my part in this? So if you're telling me that a couple comes and says, you know, I don't want to have sex, I just I'm not in that mood anymore. I need to know why. What's going on? What could you do? What could your partner do? Maybe your partner's been too rough. Maybe your partner's been too demanding. Maybe you're not getting pleasured. Why? You need to find the whys out, and then you need to work it out. That's what a marriage is. Look, you know what makes a marriage? A marriage strength is detected when there's struggles. That's the strength of a marriage. If a marriage can get by the struggles and be a supportive unit, that's the measure of a really good relationship. It's easy to get along when everything's hunky-dory and fine. The measure of a good relationship is when there's struggles. How well can you support each other and help each other when you're struggling? To just say that I don't want to do something and put a cork on it and walk away, to me, is not working out the issues in your marriage. You got to know why, and you got to work it out. What can I do to help you, hon? What is it? What am I doing? Maybe I'm not giving you enough attention. Maybe I'm pleasuring myself before you. Let's talk about it. How can I make this better? You know, if you don't work it, it ain't going to work, plain and simple.
So what about, you know, you talk about in the title, in a lot of your stuff, relationships, and now we're talking about marriage. Do you make a distinction between marriage and a relationship?
No, I really don't. I mean, I guess you can, you know, the commitment is the key. And, you know, when I have a couple that come to me that has had infidelity in some way, shape, or form, whatever that is, if it's a porn addiction, if it's a physical cheating on the other, emotional cheating, whatever it is, my question is always very, very clear. Do you want to go forward in the relationship? You know, it's up to the couple. Now, if they say no, then they can get divorced or separate. But if they make the decision to go forward in the relationship, I give them a very good blueprint on how they can work this out and build intimacy with each other. Now, you know, I cannot give them the willingness to take direction. That's got to come from them. But I can give them a blueprint. I facilitate groups for men that have done this, acted out on their wives in some of the ways we talked about. I think it's very addictive related. It's a fear of intimacy early on in childhood that tells the person that they can't be safe with their significant other, and they start to act out in destructive ways, not different from why some people drink or drug or do other things. It's not being safe in the relationship and finding another means to act out the feelings that you're not talking about. So, you know, this is what I do in my groups to try and get them to build
healthier.
So your groups
are in person? Is that
right?
Or do
you
do them on the phone
Skype?
And where are you located?
I'm in New Jersey. My groups are they're men's groups. I facilitate four groups. These are men that have done that have betrayed their spouse, and they're working on making it better. Now, again, that decision is up to them. They work on making it better. They're men's groups, they're support groups where they support each other so that they don't go back to the same destructive ways. They've learned how to be intimate with their significant other, how to talk, communicate. We've been talking about this on your show. It's the key. They've learned how to show up like healthy, empowered adults. They share their feelings, and they stay away from all of the things that have sabotaged their relationship and, in essence, have sabotaged their lives.
So I guess for you, part of the thing is you're not really suggesting to people to stay together or not stay together.
Oh, no.
But you're just
suggesting
how they can have a better relationship or better communication.
Absolutely. Hey, listen, you know what? Yeah. Some people shouldn't be married. I mean, look, we make mistakes. Yeah. Maybe we found somebody that wasn't right for us. It happens. I don't think everyone should be married. And I have, you know, some clients that have gotten divorced, and it's the best thing in the world for their kids. Their kids don't see the constant fighting every day and the screaming and the yelling.
Right.
I don't make that call. What I do is you make the call, and I'll tell you what to do. You know, if you're going to get divorced, make sure your children are always your priority in life. Make sure you don't use one kid against the other. And for sure, tell your kids that it wasn't their fault. So I guide people depending on the decision that they make. I don't make that decision.
So let me ask you a question, Thomas. What about if people, if they want to take advantage of your wisdom, right? They can't come to your group because you're in New Jersey and this is, you know, a national show. How do they get access to your wisdom?
Well, I'll tell you honestly, my first book became a bestseller, and I have clients all over the world. I have clients literally all over America. You know, they've read my book. They've gotten me on my website, which is theproblemwithme.com. That's theproblemwithme.com. And they've said that they want to do some sessions with me over the phone. And basically they said, you know, you wrote a book about me. You know, you got to the underlying reasons that I act the way I do. And they wanted to do sessions with me. So I do sessions with people basically all over the world. Now, again, they can't come to my groups, obviously. But as far as sessions go, I will do sessions and couple sessions as well with people all over the world.
And that first book was The Problem With Me, and the website is theproblemwithme.com, and
that's how they can
get a hold of you and get your book?
And that's how they get a hold of me. And then my second book, Put Your Crap... Yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And are both those books, one's more based on parenting or Are they both books on the cheating issue?
The second book, Don't Put Your Crap in Your Kid's Diaper, is based more on parenting. And look, to all your listeners, parenting is about the toughest thing in the world. I don't make a lie of that. I made a mistake in my own life with parenting. But I wanted to write a book to just help people understand what areas of their parenting skills are strong and what areas need some tweaking. You know, some of us, we rush in and we don't let our kids get out of their own messes sometimes. Some of us put our fears in our kid's diaper. We do all these things. And that's what this book's about.
Right. You know, what I always say about parenting is that there are no experts on parenting. And if they are, they're not an expert on your kid.
I agree. But there are certain things all of us can do for our children, and one is to allow them to create that safe environment at home. We were talking about that as we grow older, where your child can share their feelings with you, whatever those feelings are. Remember, feelings aren't right, wrong, true, false. This is for couples, too. When your partner is sharing your feelings, when your child is sharing your feelings, validate your feelings. Doesn't mean you have to agree, but at least let them know that you hear them. I hear what you're saying, because you know what? If that kids don't share their struggles with us, they're going to find the wrong person to do that with, and I don't think you got to listener out there, a parent out there that wants that to happen.
You know, I want to come back to, but the first book, The Problem With Me, is about cheating on relationships. Did I get that right?
It's more about it. It's addictive related cheating, and that's the stories of the men and women in that book, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but don't you think really the underlying issue, too, is just not even so much about relationship as much as the individual in terms of being able to share their feelings and to work on
becoming
a better communicator.
You hit it on the head. The most important relationship all of us have in our life is not the one with our spouse or our kids or our parents. It's the one we have with ourselves. That's why I named it The Problem Was Me. I had to look at what I had to do to communicate better, why I did what I did. I didn't even know I was doing what I was doing. It was one of those things, like with an addict. I mean, you know, recovering addicts out there, they didn't want to go ahead and ruin their lives by drinking and drugs. I don't think they cognitively said, let me go ruin my life. There was some way, shape, or form that addiction became their oxygen, that they believed they couldn't live without it. So what I do is I try to break it down and look at the underlying reasons we act the way we do, because when you look at addictions, those are symptoms. That's the switching seats in the Titanic. The real problem is what's the underneath piece, the broken piece inside that has to be fixed. It's not really about the addictions, because if all you're doing is going to try to stop drinking without fixing what's broken inside, you're going to go to drugs or something else or whatever else you do.
Yeah, Tom, I want to now you got me curious. You know, I'm an author myself, and I know coming up with the title is like huge.
Yeah.
I mean, to really get a title that you really feel good about. And I remember my first book, Dancing on the River, I spent hours and talking to many, many people trying to come up with a title. And finally came my new book, The Soul of Uncertainty. The title just kind of came to me. And I know agonize over.
Yeah.
You know, and I love The Problem With Me. I think it's a great title.
Thank you.
How did you come to that? How did you get
there?
You know,
I had a publisher and two publishers I'm negotiating with, and they said, you got to come up with a title. And every time I came up with a title, I would walk in and tell my wife the title, and she would go like that, like she hated the title. Finally, one night, I walked in, I said, you know, I got it. The Problem Was Me. And she said, you finally got the title right.
That's a great title.
That's how I got the title.
Yeah.
It was something that I just related to. You need to take responsibility, whether it's parenting, whether it's you're a recovering addict, whether you're having a problem.
Yeah.
Yep.
You say that became a bestseller on what?
Became a bestseller on Amazon, on Inner Child, and on gambling and on addictions.
Mm-hmm.
A few times it's the best. You know, I'm also a keynote speaker, so I speak in different areas around the country. And usually when I speak, there's a whole slew of books that I sell when I speak, and that's what got the books to be a bestseller.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, on my first book, I have Dr. Abraham Tversky with me as a he's a psychiatrist and a very noted author that really helped just prove some of the points I made in the book and validated some of those points, and I think that really helped it too.
It's relationships are probably relationships and money are probably the two most talked about topics, I think, that people talk about a lot. I mean, look at all the songs that have been written about love and relationships.
Yeah.
Thousands.
Yeah.
You know, I mean.
Yeah. And you know what?
And you can. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying that, you know, relationships hit on an inner core for all of us. You know, when you talk about intimacy, you know, the dictionary gives it a very positive note, trust, closeness, whatever. But I believe many people are afraid of intimacy because of their childhood, or they didn't grow up seeing,
sure,
you know, their parents nurturing each other and supporting each other. And I think many people sabotage it, and they don't even know they're doing it. They don't even know they're doing it. You know, I always tell my clients, you know, what do you need, a crystal ball? You need to tell your wife how you're feeling. Don't think she has a crystal ball and she's going to figure it out. But this is a lot of what people do. And what happens over time is people look for something else to feel good. They want to get feel goods from other place other than from their significant other. And that's when you start to get involved in all of the things we're talking about, the affairs, pornography, strip clubs, massage parlors, other areas that they're just looking at the wrong place to get that feel good, because they really don't trust intimacy is what it comes down to.
So, Thomas, let me ask you a quick question here. We're kind of getting toward the end of the show, and what I like to ask people at this time is what would, if you were going to tell our listeners one thing, one advice for our listeners, what would that be in terms of your area of expertise?
I would say, again, to work on yourself, because if you're good with who you are, comfortable in your own skin, all your relationships are going to get better. And if you're struggling with that, get help. Don't get professional help. Let somebody else take your hand and nurse you to health if you're struggling and you need that. To trust the supportive people in your life, not those people that are going to say, hey, what the heck's the matter with you? No, those people that are going to nurse you to a better life. You know, as I say in my first book, you know, I talk about, you know, silencing the negative self-talk and taking your life to a new level. Because all of us have childhood messages, and sometimes we need help in silencing those messages so we can really be who we want to be, not who we were set up to be.
So what's next for Thomas Gagliano?
Well, I've been I'm continuing my speaking tours. I have another book that's edited that is going to come out soon. It's strictly relationship-based, intimacy-based. You know, I went from individual to the problem is me to parenting to don't put your crap in your kid's diaper. And this next book is going to be strictly about relationships. And I'm just I keep speaking around the country. So that's what I'm up to right now. But thank you for asking me.
And the listeners, they can reach, they can go to your website, Thomas Gagliano. That's GAGLIANO.com.
Right. Well, they can just do the problemwasme.com, which is easier. The problemwasme.com. And if anybody leaves me a message, I will return that message within a few days. I promise you.
Well, Thomas, I want to thank you for being the guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. I always find this topic fascinating, intriguing, and there are no answers. I mean, I used to write poetry when I was a younger man, and about love and relationships. My first line is about love: is why try to figure it out anymore, my anxious friend? It's here one minute and gone the next, and breaks every rule you ever made up. And that's what I find sometimes in relationships. It always surprises you, and there's twists and turns, and just when you think you have it figured out, there's something new that comes up. But that's where our own resilience comes in, to really continue to work on ourselves. And it sounds like your book, The Problem With Me, would be a great support for the listeners out there to really look at how they can kind of develop more self-awareness and better communication skills. So until next week, I want to wish you all the best and to journey on until we have another conversation with another great guest. So again, Thomas, thank you for being the guest on the Inspire Possibility Show.
My pleasure. It was fun. Thank you.
I believe in motivation. We all talk about change, but we all get sick from telling ourselves the lies. Promises to ourselves that go unfulfilled. Usually we do this to ourselves daily. When we have a habit we want to break or change. What sort of impact do you think this has on your subconscious, your conscience, and inevitably your physical well-being? You need a person who can stimulate you, motivate you, can cause radical thought, thinks outside the box, and discovers more within you. A person who can inspire you. What you need is a life discovery guide. Let's get acquainted. I'm Mark Susnow. It's time to start the process of real discovery together. Go to my website, inspirepossibility.com, to learn more. And let's get acquainted. Voice of Mark Susnow provided by an imposter. An impersonator of Mark Susnow. An actor doing Mark Susnow impersonation. Voice of Mark Susnow provided impersonator. Fuck, what do I say there?
Hi, everybody. Welcome. This is Mark Susnow. You're tuning in to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that provides you a dose of inspiration, a dose of information, a dose of knowledge, and hopefully you kind of feel entertained, and not only entertained, but you're learning something at the same time. Each week, I attempt to invite people who I feel I consider cutting-edge thought leaders, people who are wisdom teachers. They teach us about life, about certain esoteric teaching, or just things they've learned on their journey. And today I have one of the authors of a book called Dharma Parenting. He's Dr. Robert Keith Wallace. He co-wrote this book with Dr. Frederick Travis. And they're called brain researchers. And they do a lot of research on how the brain works. And years ago, I heard about them in the early 70s, late 60s, they were researchers, did a lot of study on one of the most popular meditation techniques at that time, transcendental meditation. He's Dr. Keith Wallace. He has a PhD from UCLA, and he's done postgraduate work at Harvard, and he's here. Are you here, Keith?
I'm here.
All right. Well, welcome. I'm so glad to hear your voice and know that I'm getting to talk to you. I've heard your name so often.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, and I've been looking at your book, Dharma Parenting, which I have a copy of, and I'm familiar with some of the concepts that you talk about in the book, and I guess I was thinking that a lot of our listeners, you know, a lot of our listeners don't have children. So I was thinking that our conversation could be a little more generic in terms of how these insights you have really can apply to everybody, not just parents, but everybody. And I think there's a child inside all of us anyway. So with that in mind, congratulations.
Thank you. It's funny. I had a couple of friends who aren't parents, and they read the book and they said, wow, this is really good. This is not just for parents. Because it's interesting when you're talking about this whole thing, you're also talking about relationships and you're talking about how to improve yourself. So I'm happy to talk about other topics because, as you say, a lot of people aren't parents out there. The book focuses on really two very interesting topics that I think are valuable to anyone. And the first is we talk about it as to heal yourself, and we give this advice to parents, but it really applies to everyone. And we have a number of recommendations, but one of the main ones is starting transcendental meditation. both Fred and I have been studying this for many years. I studied it first at UCLA and then at Harvard, and we did a lot of papers together, particularly in the late 90s. And what we find is that people that practice this technique have a more coherent brain. This more coherent brain seems to really unfold a lot of very positive qualities.
So Keith, let's talk before we go on. When you say coherent brain, what do you mean? I'm going to ask you a lot of questions.
That's a good question, and I
like to interrupt. I like to interrupt my guests because all of a sudden I get this idea. What does he mean by that? So
yeah, no, you're right.
I want to know, what do you mean by coherent?
Well, coherence is a technical word really used to describe when one part of the brain is communicating with another. A lot of brain research today is actually showing that what we call consciousness is in fact just a neural network in which different parts of the brain suddenly hook up. And when they all hook up together, we begin to have an experience of something, whether it's visual or auditory. So coherence, in its most basic sense, is just integration between different parts of the brain. But
okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. What's interesting is that there are different degrees of coherence. Fred, in his research, has shown that business executives who have higher EEG coherence, and here EEG is just talking about an electroencephalograph, a measure of the electrical activity of the brain. When you put an electrode on the surface and you look at the various frequencies that are generated, and he can measure, you know, managers. He did this study in Norway, and they found that those who perform better had higher coherence. And we find in our research that people, both during meditation and outside of meditation, as they keep meditating, they have higher coherence. So we really feel this is an indication of a brain that's operating in a more peak or more optimal form, where all the different parts of the brain are working together in an integrated fashion. And we're extremely interested in trying to characterize what happens during meditation and how it affects, particularly how it affects how we deal with stress in the world.
So let me interject here. So we're clear on this, what you're saying is through meditation, different parts of the brain seem to work with the brain seems to work, all the different facets of the brain, the different lobes, the different everything, just seems to work better so that it functions better, essentially.
Yeah, there's more. And I guess, you know, you could say that everything we do in life, and this happens since we're a little kid, is caused by how the neural circuits in the brain. So if you're brought up in life and, you know, your parents behave in a certain way and maybe they cause a lot of stress and you feel dejected or don't get attention, you will actually develop neural circuits at that very early age, which will create habits in you, sometimes negative habits, that are quite hard to overcome. And, you know, a lot of studies have been done, an amazing number of studies have been done to show that kids that are abused, kids that are neglected, they have different expression of DNA. Certain genes are expressed differently, particularly in the stress circuits in the brain. There's certain circuits in the brain which regulate our stress response. There's one area in particular called the amygdala, where we store all our fears. And if that gets wired in the wrong way, it just creates havoc in the body. Because instead of reasoning, we drop down to a very base emotional state, and we get involved with primarily fear and anxiety and the kind of emotions that really overwhelm the thinking parts of the brain, the prefrontal cortex, where all our higher levels of reasoning are. And when you look at people meditate,
Keith, let me see now. See if I understand this correctly. Is it what I hear you say? I think anyway, what you're saying is that some of these negative patterns and thoughts we get in childhood create certain neural pathways, usually in the amygdala, and that kind of add to our thinking in a negative way.
Exactly.
That all of a sudden there's like these things, these pathways. How can you see that there are these pathways? Do they show up in these EKGs in a certain way, or how can you actually tell these pathways?
Not really. You can see a little bit in brain imaging. You can see where certain areas of the brain get thicker. Let's say you play the guitar, you play the piano. It turns out the more
you
practice, Well, the more you practice, if I did brain imaging on you when you first started, and then I did some brain imaging on you, 5 or 10 years later, I would actually see that in those areas, say where your fingers are touching the keyboard, I can map those areas in the brain. I would find that there are more connections there. The areas become actually thicker, and you can see that in brain imaging, so that you know, in fact, that all your practice that you've done in playing, the guitar or the piano, it's going to result in new connections in the brain, which make it easier for you to play. You don't have to think about it as much. Some of these are routines that are embedded into certain parts of the brain, but some parts of the brain that I can look at in a brain imaging, I can actually see physical changes there as a result of your experience. So experience does translate into changes in the brain, sometimes more pathways, sometimes different pathways. More is the easiest thing to say. Different pathways are a little harder to see, but like say something about stress. Let's say a child was stressed when they were young. You can actually measure in the brain that there are parts of the brain where, A, there are different connections, and B, there are chemical pathways. You've heard of neurotransmitters like serotonin or adrenaline. Well, where what they call the receptors, which are where these little chemicals fit into, they change, the number of them change, so that people, who have been stressed can develop neural circuits and neural pathways where they overreact to stress. And, that's not good. And that they're from an early age, and it can influence our whole lives. And the question is, how do you get rid of that? I mean, what do you do to remove it? It's a habit. It's a pathway that mimics a habit. And essentially, it's interesting. The brain has a simple principle. It's use it or lose it. So if you don't engage those stress pathways and you start to rewire the brain in new pathways that are more coherent, more integrated, that bypass some of these emotional centers and blend things in such a way that we don't overreact to stress, then you can change. Your brain is so dynamic, so flexible, that it can change. Some of these are deep-seated, though, so they're not easy to change. But, sometimes people, when they practice, like transcendental meditation, first time they meditate, they're like, oh, my God, I never knew that I could this relaxed. I didn't know that anxiety could go away. And so they'll get an immediate response. But then, because the brain is physical.
Keith, Yeah. So what I hear you saying, again, I like to kind of decipher this for my listeners and for myself, is that the brain is really flexible, and these neural pathways that have been there for a long time, we can create new neural pathways that are after we've done other positive things such as meditation or playing music or other things like that. They start to create. And what happened? Do we actually change those or old neural pathways, or do we just create new ones?
Well, by
there's
creating,
my question. It,
No,
I mean, are they still there? It's just that they don't.
Well, they could be there, but if you don't use them, if you stop using them, they start to wither away. So you can actually kind of decrease them. I mean, some of them are so deep and they come from childhood, they're very, very difficult to remove just because it's like, you know, kids when they're young, there's, you know, like a new-year-old from 0 to 3 years old basically hardly has any connections at all. And that child comes out, they're just seeing kind of flashes of light. And it takes experience and growth to have these pathways form. So from 0 to 3, you're getting 24 million new connections every minute. That little baby sitting there in the cradle is actually, there's a, so much going on in its brain. And so those early pathways are powerful, and they're deep within us. And so, you know, those are the hardest ones to change because we've been using them for many, many years. And every time we use them, we reinforce them. And every time they get reinforced, they get harder to remove. So you can't expect that you're going to have one meditation and everything's going to clear up all your stresses and traumas. And
so,
stuff.
Keith, before we get into the meditation aspect, I want to interject here and let our listeners know you're listening to the Inspire Possibility Show. This is Mark Susnell. My guest today is Dr. Keith Wallace. He's one of the original TM researchers. He's a neuroscientist. He's a physiologist. He has a PhD from Stanford, done a lot of research at Harvard, a lot of postgraduate work, and he is a source of information. He has a new book out with Frederick Travis called Dharma Parenting. How do people get the book?
It's pretty much in every bookstore. It's Penguin is the publisher, and it's on Amazon in every bookstore. But one thing I would say for people who are interested in the book is that you can go to our website, which is dharmaparenting.com, and you can take a free quiz. And this free quiz tells you something quite interesting. You can take it for yourself and your child, and it gives you what's called your brain-body type or your brain-body nature. This brain-body type or nature, this quiz, is based on both modern science and ancient knowledge. There's a wonderful tradition from India called Ayurveda, and they have a way of assessing three basic body types. And we really now understand this kind of ancient knowledge in a modern way. People have done DNA research looking at gene expression and found that there's quite a powerful genetic basis to this old system of typing. So anyone who, you know, kind of wants to get a sample of what's in the book can go right onto that website, and they can either order the book directly from Amazon, or they can just take the quiz, get a, you know, it's free, and get a report back. And this was the second thing I wanted to tell you about, not only the idea that parents should practice meditation and heal themselves, but this was the second part of this book, which is very interesting. And actually, it applies to non-parents too, because knowing your brain body type gives you an insight into A, how you can get along with your kids, but also how you can get along with your partner. Because each one of us is different, and we have strengths and weaknesses. But let's take an example here. In this system,
right,
they have three basic types. They call them, you know, we use the original names just to kind of honor the tradition. But there's what they call a Vata type, a Pitta type, and a Kapha type. So let's say you're a Pitta type. You're the guy, and you've got a Vata wife. Well, what would that mean? Well, it's very typical. The guy, Pitta guy, would be a real strong athlete, very competitive, very goal-oriented, very, you know, energetic. And the Vata wife would be very delicate, very sensitive, imaginative, creative, an artist. Now, when they're in their kind of balanced state, this is a perfect couple. I mean, it's really lovely because the Pitta husband can provide all the order and energy that's needed. The Vata wife provides that lovely feminine touch, the sensitivity, the artistic quality. When they're out of balance, it can get pretty messy. And it's the same thing applies to a parent and a child. That's how we use it in the book. So if you have a Pitta mom or a Pitta dad, and they're, you know, super competitive, they love sports, and yet they've got this delicate child, you can have these brain-body types colliding. And what you really need to know is how to keep them in balance. So the Vata really needs to be grounded. They need routine. They need to always stay well-rested. And they are the most creative, imaginative, wonderful human beings. But they get out of balance, they get anxious and they get nervous. And the Pitta is, you know, powerful, can do all kinds of things, kind of a fire element underlying it. But let's say, you know, Pitta guy goes out, forgets having lunch, suddenly finds this fire, instead of driving him to do good things, is now causing him to be irritable and angry, and suddenly he's no longer Mr. Nice Guy. He's actually, you know, having a very difficult time. And if it's a child, they can just go into a temper tantrum like that. So a lot of the book is about understanding these types, how to keep them in balance, what are the triggers for each type. The Kapha type we haven't talked about is completely different. Very easygoing, good-natured, kind of slow, very peaceful. But if they get out of balance, they can withdraw. They can put the brakes on everything. Sometimes Kapha kids, they just resist change. Like, I don't want to do that. You know, it's very hard to get them to do anything. So we have different tools in the books. You know, basically they're for kids, but they really apply to all of us. And these tools are great tools to kind of be aware of to keep your life, keep your brain-body type in balance, and really get the most out of life. Dharma, the word dharma means journey, path. It's kind of finding your path in life. So dharma parenting is all about using these tools to help your kids find their path in life.
So let me come back to the bigger thing, or not on bigger, but the theme of back to the individual who is trying to find, is struggling in this complex world. And you talk about your research in transcendental meditation. I mean, I know there are many other types of meditation that everybody that's on that particular path thinks is the best path. What is your feeling about that in terms of, I know you're into transcendental meditation. I mean, there's you know, a lot of people, there's a Buddhist center around here and where they do
Vipassana. Oh yeah, no, there's.
So what do you, how do you, the one thing I, even though I was into TM myself, the one thing that I, and still am, that I felt is a little, perhaps, gets in the way is this idea that this is the only path. And I think there's so many good paths. Has there been much research on these other paths? Or, I mean, maybe you have you done, have you and Fred as brain researchers, and have you done much research on other types of meditation?
We haven't ourselves, but there's a lot right now. And every meditation, it's really interesting. Fred wrote a really nice paper which characterizes three main types. Pretty much all of them fall into this, and they all have different brainwave patterns. So there's one type which he calls focus meditation, and that's, you know, kind of Zen, and those kinds of meditation where you're really attempting to concentrate or focus on something. Then
right.
There's another type which he calls open monitoring, which is very much like mindfulness and Vipassana,
mm-hmm.
where you're, you know, more you're open and you're just kind of watching your breath go in and out or feeling your body or, you know, generally kind of not trying to focus, but at the same time keeping kind of your mind open. And then Fred calls TM automatic transcending. And it's, you know, kind of like you turn on a switch and suddenly your body changes into a state of inner wakefulness. You kind of have like a change in your physiology where you kind of very quickly go into this nice inner state of peace and happiness. Now, each of them produces a different style. They all actually produce good results. TM is probably the most well-researched for clinical conditions. I would say mindfulness may be studied quite extensively for brain imaging and even genetic expression. And, you know, they're still producing results. And we're not trying to force people one way or the other. Everybody has to pick what they like best. The TM had some quite remarkable results with high blood pressure and heart disease, which the others haven't shown yet, maybe just because we had a head start or maybe because it is more effective in those conditions. There was a study done at University of Wisconsin. It looked at people over a five-year period who had already had heart attacks or some heart disease, and it found a 47% less risk for getting a heart attack, a stroke, or dying in the TM group as compared to the health education control group. So it's
right.
a pretty, but nobody has really compared these techniques on, to, it's interesting, there have been almost no studies where these techniques have been compared. One psychological study on anxiety where TM came out quite a bit better than the other techniques. And blood pressure generally we come out better, but you know, it's one of those things where it's very much needed to have this kind of a comparison so people can get a feeling for what they actually want to do.
And I think I always say to people, the best meditation is the one you do. Because it's, I mean, that's my theory, you know?
Yeah.
The one you do. One you do, it doesn't do any. I think a mistake that I've found, because I've been into this a long time, is people are always searching for the perfect way, and rather than just kind of getting into what's in front of them. And I think that, you know, whatever you do, I think
yeah.
when you go deeper, you have these transcendent experiences, and
yeah. Yeah,
but
I
also think the research,
good.
For me, what was important was the research and all the studies done in the 70s, because you're
right.
back then it was new. I mean, especially for I don't know when you probably got it as what, 65 or 66 or.
I started in 67. I was the PhD student at UCLA. I did most of my studies from 67 to 70. And then I went on to Harvard. But I, you know, when I was doing those studies, there had been a few studies before me on yoga and Zen meditators. But
uh-huh.
really, those guys were super experts. You know, they didn't find much
no.
change in the beginners. You had to look at somebody had been doing it for 20 or 30 years and then they got some change. And we actually found quite remarkable changes in beginning meditators, and that was what was
right.
so cool about
I'm gonna have to cut you off here because
sure.
we're running out of time. I
no
wish
problem.
We had more time.
No problem.
So
I won't worry
because I'm going to meditate. But
yeah, okay.
But I want to thank you for being my guest, being a guest on the show, and also
my
I want to commend you for your courage for getting into this when you did, because I think at that time you had to be courageous, you had to be bold, and truthful to yourself to say, you know what, I know there's more than I'm experiencing to life. And that's what I want to say to our listeners, you know, there is more than what you're experiencing, but you also have to do the work. And I think people like you have kind of made it easier for to do the work because you're saying, hey, this is where you're headed. This is what's possible.
Thank you,
Keith, for being my guest.
Okay,
and until the meantime,
good.
To the next week, journey on.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. 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 Imagine the possibilities.